It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Decades ago, the liquid byproduct from cheesemaking, whey, was considered a waste product. Some farmers spread it on their fields or fed it to their hogs to get rid of it. Today, it's a very different story. A surge in protein demand has led to a spike in whey production. You'll find it in shakes and supplements and even as a strategy in obesity treatment. The global market values for whey varies. The USDA estimates it's a $5 to $10 billion industry. Other market analysts say whey protein is a $12 billion global industry and growing fast. So how is this protein boom changing Wisconsin agriculture? Master cheesemaker Ken Hyman is co-owner of Nasonville Dairy near Marshfield. The plant produces about 185,000 pounds of cheese a day. And Kevin Draper is a New York Times business correspondent covering the agricultural industry. He traveled to central Wisconsin to report out a story titled America's Protein Obsession is Transforming the Dairy Industry. Kevin and Ken, welcome to you both.
Thank you so much for having us.
This is Ken, and thank you for having us here in Wisconsin.
Ken, let's start with you. You've been immersed in the cheese industry your whole life, your parents buying Nasonville in the 1960s. The rest is history. When did you realize whey was starting to outpace cheese in your industry and affecting your bottom line?
Actually, that actually goes back to the 60s. In the 60s, what happened was we began to get into whey proteins very early, late 60s, early 70s. And what that is, you know, that was just 34% protein. None of the new technologies had been developed. This is just what was there. And you could see that it had potential at that point. And it has continued to evolve from that point.
Was there a learning curve with whey? Like, you didn't become a master cheesemaker overnight. You had to learn the craft over time to become that master cheesemaker. Is there an art to learn with processing whey?
There's an art to learn. I guess the biggest thing about it is learning, you know, what does that mean when I say that I have a 34% protein? You know, well, how far can I push the limit before I can get to the 90? How far can I go that I can transport it? When will it settle out? When will the sugars fall out of it? There's so many different things that go with it that you learn by the school of hard knocks in a lot of cases. And it's become, you know, there's people out there that evolve themselves in finding the new avenues in which we are going to continue to use proteins.
So when the whey leaves your plant, who is your customer? Where does it go?
Well, a lot of ours will go to Actis Nutrition, because we are centrally located and they have plants in Minnesota and in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. And so, you know, and then they have some in Iowa. So what it allows them to do is it allows them to select where they would like this to go. And then they are bouncing. A lot of times when you build a plant that's unique to a certain protein, you become immersed in that and that becomes your whole livelihood. What this allows us to do is we became the supplier to Actis. And what Actis does is they find out which item of today, next week, that they're going to need the most of, and then they push the protein to that point.
Kevin, you have been tracing how whey has become a big business. Can you give us some numbers? How big?
Yeah, it can be a little hard to tell. It depends upon, you know, what we're talking about. When we talk about whey, Ken mentioned sort of there's this difference in protein content. You have the standard or 34% protein content whey, and then you have sort of what we're talking about a lot when we talk about protein powders with this 80 plus or 90 percent of that whey is protein. But it's anywhere from a $5 to $10 billion business a year. And the sort of important thing to know is that basically everyone projects that in the next decade, that's going to double. That sort of this thing is growing 10% or more every single year and is expected to continue doing that for the foreseeable future.
Why is that?
It's sort of a convergence of a number of factors. One is sort of just the technological and scientific ability to consistently get that really high protein way. But really, it's a demand story. It is more and more people demanding these protein products. And some of it is sort of we have an aging population. And as you age, you often lose muscle mass. And so doctors are increasingly prescribing or sort of advising their patients to do things like lift weights, you know, not necessarily deadlift hundreds of pounds, but do a little bit of weightlifting and eat a little bit more protein. Sort of the trendy diets or sort of the food styles that people are into tend to emphasize protein. And then a big part of this is Ozempic and sort of these other drugs that are, you know, weight loss drugs. When you take them, you lose weight. And a lot of that weight you lose is muscle. People are losing muscle mass on them. And so just like with aging patients, doctors are prescribing patients on these drugs, sort of a regimen of weightlifting or these other kind of high impact exercise activities. And they need to eat more protein. And it's hard for them to eat more protein because these drugs, you know, make them feel more satiated, make them feel more full. And so maybe eating a big steak and getting a lot of protein out of it is hard for them. But it is easier if they can eat sort of a small bar that is packed with whey protein. And so sort of all of those things have been converging, you know, some from decades ago, some from only a few years ago, to make this a time when whey protein is in heavy demand.
Ken, when your family bought Naysenville more than 60 years ago, how was whey being used then, and how does that compare to now?
There was no comparison. When we bought it, when we bought the plant or whatever, whey was an absolute byproduct. And what I mean by a byproduct, it had no value to me. I would actually take it out and land spread it, or I would take it out and feed it to hogs. And that was kind of the end of it when we started. We didn't have as much, nowhere near, but it did not have a value.
And now it has a much greater value to your business. Can you talk about how much compared to cheese?
In the value scheme of things, it's gotten to be where we don't know what the full potential is. It's gotten to a point now that we know that it represents over 23% of our total dollars coming in, and it will be immensely, it'll continue to grow to know to a point that we don't know where that point is. I mean, as Kevin had talked about, there's all new products out there. There's so many new things coming. We found so many ways to fractionate proteins to make into new items, the new bars, the new drinks, the new things that are coming on. And we're getting to a more and more native milk protein as well. And these things are so pure and our body accepts them so well. As the doctors and a lot of the medical people know, this is where we want to go to.
We're talking about how the protein trend is affecting the dairy industry. We have Kevin Draper, a New York Times business correspondent covering the egg industry, wrote about the increased demand for whey, the liquid byproduct of cheese, how it's impacting the dairy industry. And Ken Hyman is here, master cheesemaker, and owns Naysenville Dairy in Marshfield. Kevin, you know, let's go up the supply chain here. How is demand for whey affecting farmers with dairy cattle?
Yeah, it's sort of a convoluted process in how dairy farmers get paid for their milk, but they are for sure seeing the impact of whey. We could spend this entire program talking about the federal milk marketing order system and laws passed in the 1930s, but we will save that, I think, for another
day,
program.
Another day.
But basically, sort of dairy farmers get a pretty low price for their milk, and they do not particularly have a lot of room to maneuver. There is sort of more supply usually than demand, and so they sort of have to accept the price that they're given. And the way the price works is sort of it's affected by all the different ways milk could be used. And so we're talking about butter, milk, ice cream, cheese, lactose, whey, sort of all these things that milk go into, and what the demand for them is and what the cost for those are, they sort of all get totaled up into sort of a price that farmers receive for their milk. And sort of in the last two decades, I had an economist do some calculations, and sort of it's essentially doubled, that whey used to make up somewhere in the 5 to 6 percentage points of the milk check that a farmer got. 5 to 6% of what they got for their milk was how it was being used in whey. And now that is sort of doubled. It depends on the month, but we're talking 10, 11, 12% of the check they receive is made up from whey. And it's not that they've gotten rich off that. It's sort of more that that has kept them afloat, that sort of if whey didn't have this increased value, you would probably see more dairy farmers getting out of dairy or going bankrupt or not sort of being able to get by. And whey has pushed some of them over the top to, you know, being able to continue to sustain operations, not making them rich, but certainly making a big difference in their livelihood.
Certainly, dairy farm bankruptcies have been a huge issue here in Wisconsin. Ken, you work so closely as well with dairy farmers. What have you heard them telling you about whey?
Well, undoubtedly, what they're learning, they're still in this learning stage about understanding, is there something that I can do different? Is there something I can do, as Kevin's saying, when it gets to feeding programs, what can I do that will enhance you to make my milk worth more? It's always about making my milk worth more. Is it that I'm using A2 proteins? What am I doing that's going to make the product that I'm producing worth more to you, which means I can get more for it, you know, from you? And so that's what it's gotten down to. They're very interested in understanding what's this going to do and how can we work with it. And so that's kind of where it's at.
I wonder, Kevin, you know, China is a big market for whey that comes from the U.S. And right now that triggers certainly a question about tariff policies and access to foreign markets. And I just wonder if tariffs will affect the whey market, or is it too soon to tell?
I think that the answer is sort of undoubtedly yes. The question is sort of to what extent. Generally, tariffs affect dairy a little bit less than other agricultural products because a lot of dairy products are sort of really hard to transport. We don't have tanker ships of milk, going from here to Europe or something like that. It's just cost prohibitive. But when you talk about whey, that is a product that, a lot of it does get sold around the world to be used in baby formula, to be used in sort of animal feed, and some cases sort of as this high protein whey, because it is now not a liquid, large volume product, but it is sort of a really compact powder product. And so undoubtedly, sort of as there are tariffs that will affect some of the milk we get from Ireland and some other places, and as countries place retaliatory tariffs on the United States, it may make it more expensive for them to, import whey from the United States. And so, we might expect the price of the stuff to drop a little bit if there is less demand, but with our sort of tariff policy ping-ponging around a little bit, changing every day, having sort of unclear effects, I think it's probably too soon to say exactly what it will do.
Ken, do you have an eye on international demand, or are you mostly concerned about serving markets closer to home in Wisconsin and domestic?
I think we'll pick on China because they are Chinese, our people in China that buy from us on the cheese side, has pretty much come to a screeching halt at the moment. But on the whey protein side, they're still buying. To them, there's enough value there to make it worthwhile to them. They, they complain a lot about the whey protein, about the price, but they continue to buy. I'm sure it's down. I'm sure that they would be buying more. But so we need to address where we're going to get and how we're going to get there. But we do see it, yes. As Kevin said, we know that it shows up, and their cheese orders have dropped to virtually nothing. And but their protein orders, they were trying to push everything they could to get it in before the tariffs were going to take a major effect. And as Kevin said, there is a bit of latitude there. You know, if we're doing something that's humanitarian and a few other things, some of it gets a little bit less of a tariff.
Kevin, back to you. You know, you cover all of agriculture. I wonder, you know, as you continue to watch the dairy industry evolve, we've got cheese industry changing and adapting with whey. What are you watching for next?
I mean, always watching for tariffs. You know, I mentioned there isn't too much dairy trade, but there is a decent dairy trade with Canada. You know, a lot of our milk is located Wisconsin, Michigan, New York, and the dairy industry has wanted a larger foothold into Canada for a long time. So what happens with Canada, what happens with Mexico, and sort of the tariffs within North America are a pretty big story. Another big one is just sort of consumer demand. That, you know, as well as Ken runs his business and dairy farms run their business, you know, they're sort of ultimately, they respond to consumer demand. And so are people, you know, going to continue to want cheese? What kind of cheese will they want? We drink less milk sort of as a country as we used to. Will that trend continue? You know, where are people going with vegetarianism and veganism and how that may affect their dairy input? You know, it's not quite dairy. But obviously, we had huge issues with eggs and egg supply and where the egg supply is. And so a lot of it is what people want and how manufacturers like Ken, how farmers are able to respond to that or not able to respond to that and how that affects their prices. You know, the great thing about being on the agriculture beat is there are a million interesting things going on. And the terrible thing about the agriculture beat is that there are a million interesting things going on. And so you've kind of got to look and watch all of it and try to make a decision on when something is important enough or when it is interesting enough to really dive into it.
All right, Ken, final question to you, being a family business here. You're always thinking about the next generation of owners and ensuring that you're leaving it in good hands for that next generation. Is whey helping you sleep at night? Do you think whey is going to be that transition for the next generation of Naysonville dairy?
I don't think there's a question about that. I think it's absolutely true that the whey... The part about taking an item at one point, as Kevin said, you know, it's now representing this bigger and bigger piece of the milk check. You know, this is where the future is. I believe that we were told many years ago that we would probably see a day when the cheese that we're producing would be dictated to us by the way that we needed, what proteins we needed, what we could capture our best return on, because it's here today.
Well, Ken and Kevin, thank you so much for the conversation. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you.
It was great. Thank you.
That is Ken Hyman, who became a licensed cheesemaker at age 16. He is co-owner of Naysonville Dairy near Marshfield. And New York Times business correspondent Kevin Draper, who covers the agricultural industry. Draper traveled to central Wisconsin for reporting on the growth of whey production and how it's changing the dairy industry. We'll be right back.